I am a huge dick fan. If anyone who knows me, they always, Dave, I have a shirt
you
that says
can't,
that.
You can't get your fill of dick.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
Hi, I remain Ian Boothby.
You remain Ian Boothby?
Yep.
Okay. Well, then I remain David Dedrick.
Okay, cool.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our
You've already said that. You've already said hello.
Have I already said hello?
Yeah, you've already done that. But just move on.
Goodbye, everyone. And
nope,
welcome
too soon?
Too soon? Too soon.
Dave, too soon.
Too soon, Dave. Too soon. Welcome to our... This is show number...
Happy 9/11 week, everybody.
59. 50, show number 59?
No.
Part of our countdown?
Too soon.
Too soon?
That's right. We're 41.
59 shows away from... whatever. Yeah, you're right.
You're right. 59 shows away for a countdown to 100.
I'm all messed up. We are...
having our worst opening we've ever had.
No, not really.
No, it's okay.
This is our best opening we've ever had.
All right. Happy opposite day, everybody.
I'm more of a glass completely full kind of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at it as our best opening we've ever had.
And I drink out of plastic bottles.
That's your problem.
That probably is my problem. You're probably not wrong. We were talking about the idea of, instead of doing one long podcast today, having a series of speed podcasts.
Yes.
So I don't know if we're going to
do 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Then there'll be a bell.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to switch. So you'll go to stop podcasting yourself, and I will go to WTF or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you'd have me on that show in a second.
Sure.
And then... and then 15 seconds later, another bell.
Go to the Justice Pals and the S&M podcast.
S&M podcast.
Then I'll do This American Life.
You do This American Life, a touching story about the situation that you're in at this time.
Yeah. You know what? I used to like This American Life. It's just too depressing now. It's just too... I don't want to cry on the bus. I don't need to hear about the monkey that thought she was people and then got attacked by the poachers because she went in for a hug. I don't need that in my life.
Is that a true story?
It is a true story. She dressed up in a little dress and they raised her like a little girl and she was the sweetest little monkey. And then she trusted poachers and yeah, things went bad from there.
Wow.
I know. And you try not to cry at the end of it. Try not to cry.
Well, there was a thing going around on Facebook of you had to watch, I think, 7 different things.
It was a series of things. It was like try not to cry
try
by the end.
Cry.
The one about Animal Crossing got me.
Which one was that
one? It was a video game one, and it was one where I got through all of them. I'm absolutely fine.
You're absolutely fine until it came to Frogger.
That's right.
And so Frogger's trying to cross the road, and you had tears pouring down your face.
Like, the frog should be able to swim. Why is water killing this poor frog? If the frog can't survive in water, it's going to die anyway. Mm-hmm. This frog never had a chance.
No, not at all.
Poor Frogger.
Poor Frogger.
Yeah.
I can see why you're upset.
Well, no, the story was, and I'm going to get through it without choking up,
okay.
It was a woman and her mom, and she played a game called Animal Crossing, I think on the GameCube or the Wii, I'm not sure which one it was,
okay.
And it's a little game where you're in a little village, and you do jobs, and you farm, and you do all these kind of things, you go walk up the woods, and you go fishing, and she played the game, and she wasn't the biggest fan of it, but her mom kind of liked it,
yeah.
And then her mom got MS, and had very limited movement, and was basically housebound.
Yeah.
And she played the game a lot and she really liked going for a walk in the game and fishing and doing some farming. And she went out and did all this kind of thing. And so, you know, she sort of was living a little bit vicariously through the game. So when her mom passed away, there's an element to the game where you can put things in each other's mailboxes. Like if two people are playing the game, I could put something in your mailbox that I find. I can't get an apple. I put it in your mailbox. And when her mom passed away a couple of months later, she put the game in. And she saw all these letters in her mailbox, and there were things her mom had sent her while she played the game. And it was like, oh, I thought you'd like this little gift, or here's a poem, or here's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all these things that her mom just like was thinking about her, you know, when she was playing the games. And that just choked me up. Just the idea that like you're just your mom loves you so much that
yeah.
she just wants to give stuff to you. And it was just, yeah, completely.
He's choking. He's got tears rolling down his face right now as he speaks.
Yeah, but I'm an actor, so I can summon tears.
You can summon tears.
Summon those
like
crocodile
that.
Tears.
You can do that, actually. You've shown me that.
That is something like, if you want to make me cry, it's not, oh, the dog got hit by a car. That won't make me cry in a movie.
No.
But if someone shows kindness to someone in a movie, I'm out. I'm completely out.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
That does shook me up.
Yeah.
It does. It does. I have the exact same... reaction to, well, yeah. I get choked up at that, too.
What were you going to say? You got a reaction to what? You're going to choke up over something.
Well, I was going to talk about churchy stuff. So
that's okay.
Because what's interesting to me is like a lot of
we had a satanic priest on last week. Let's balance this out.
Let's balance it out. That's yin or yang.
By the way, his wife, Ty's wife, Kieran, wrote us to say, look, a correction. He's not a satanic priest. He's a failed satanic priest.
He left. He's an apostate satanic
priest.
He
wrote down 665 on the form.
They just didn't go through.
That's right.
That was the problem. He filled out the wrong form. He filled out the 665 form.
That's right. And wrote down Prince of Dark Mess. it auto-corrected on his spell check to that. So it didn't quite go through. He was not. But go ahead.
Well, what's interesting is when, you know, when you, I don't know how long you went to the Catholic Church, but you must have gone when they had Stations of the Cross at Easter.
Yes, I went, I was in catechism until I was about 17.
Yeah, which does nothing for me. I enjoy the service, but...
Well, you weren't Catholic, so
there
were
people,
have...
but we still have it in our
oh, right, okay.
in Anglican, because Anglicanism is essentially Catholicism, you know.
On acid, am I right?
That's right, but by boring people, on acid. You are right.
Wow, I would actually love to see that, boring people on acid. Like a video of you like, here's some really dull people on acid. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's right. They'd be like, wow, that carpet looks really beige.
But like really beige.
Really?
I mean really beige.
That is such a super beige. It's almost like you can press down on it and it's soft.
Yeah.
This carpet is soft and
beige.
Did you
ever really watch paint dry? I mean, you can like, you know what? You can hear it dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. I can watch the grass being cut. That's the boring person.
Yep.
Because so, I was thinking if you can hear the grass grow.
Now, the nice thing is we've set this up with like a boring thing. So whatever you say now will be exciting. You're worried maybe it was going to be a little dull,
well, no,
but it's actually going
to
be
I was just going to bring up that there's a lot of tears at that time. Like,
mm-hmm.
especially with the ladies. The ladies have like the tears rolling down their faces during the Stations of the Cross as you go through the procession. And we sing hymns in between and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really do anything for me. It's, you know, obviously it's important, but I don't choke up. I don't get all upset. But if it's after Easter, when we're singing about, you know, Christ's return and it's all about service and all those elements of Easter... Then I get choked up.
Yeah.
I get choked up at that aspect of
it,
you know. Like, I could care, you know, obviously it's important, but I don't know. It just doesn't move me in that way. I'm much more moved by, the kindness aspect of it. And so, servant stories and stuff like that, those always touch me in a way that, you know, grisly murder doesn't.
What was that Jack Nicholson movie? We had naked Kathy Bates in it. What was that one?
About Schmidt.
Right. Which gets you at the end with the sweetest little thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this little thing of kindness that he's been doing and the kid writes him a letter back. And it's just like, oh, that was, it's one of those things though in a movie, which I think is a mean thing as a movie maker, a director or producer to do.
Yeah.
Which is give you that teary scene right at the end. Cause it's just like, ball, and then lights come up in the theater. It's like, you son of a bitch. And I'm like grabbing my napkin and it's covered in popcorn butter and I'm rubbing it against my eyes and now that's burning even more. And it's just like, just give us a couple of seconds to get ourselves together before you put the lights back on. Don't just boop back up and now we're all swollen face leaving the theater.
That is an interesting film, and it's interesting for Alexander Payne because I don't think most of his films don't have that moment of lateness to them.
No, I was in the room with him at a film festival, and he was talking about why he does movies, and the reason he does movies is to spend time with men, because he's so many women in his life that he went, I'm just spending time with these women. I've got to find an excuse to go and hang out with men. And he couldn't play football really well, and was like, I don't know what to do. Go play poker. Like, I don't want to go to a strip club. Like making movies. And so when he makes movies, he gets to hang out with like a mix of like women and men. And so that's how he gets social, has a social life, is making films.
Wow.
So he said that's his primary motivation for making these movies, which are really good movies. But like, it's just to actually hang out with people, specifically men, because he has so many women in his life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. What was his first film? Was that one about Jane Doe or something, the one with Laura Dern?
Am I thinking right? Did he do Go?
No.
Are we taking Citizen Ruth?
Citizen Ruth, yeah.
Citizen Ruth he did.
Yeah.
And
Election.
Yeah, Election.
Sideways.
Right.
That new one that The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called? No, it's not called The Departed.
Isn't it?
Is it called The Departed?
There was a movie called The Departed.
I'm getting it mixed up now. Now I'm thinking it's that one with Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio. Is that The Departed?
That could be.
So what's the other one then?
If you know what it is, listeners, phone in now.
The Left Afters.
And by phone in now, please phone into the past when we're recording this.
That's right. Please correct us now.
Damn it, we should do this show live. Listen,
but isn't that The Departed? The one with Jack Nicholson and Leonardo, you know, the Martin Scorsese film?
Whoa, that one. Infernal Affairs. That's right. Yes, that is, I think.
The Departed.
I think it is. I could look it up. Should we look it up?
I think because the one with, look it up.
Okay.
Because I just thought of what it is. Gilligan's Island.
Okay. I think we've talked about in the past, how that's amazing that has not been made into a movie
George
yet.
Clooney is Gilligan.
That is amazing that has not.
He lives in Hawaii.
I think Roberto Benigni would be Gilligan if they remade it now.
He's a bit too old for that part now.
Well, they've been on the island a while. I think that's the angle you take is they never left.
You don't want old Gilligan. That's the problem with the later
Ginger
ones.
So would be played by Helen Mirren because they've been on the island a while.
Yes.
Skipper is not played because he died from a heart attack.
That's right. Thurston Howell would be played by a skeleton.
Thurston Howell would be played by Mitt Romney in old age makeup.
Okay.
Lovey would be played by a raisin wearing a hat.
That's right.
And the Harlem Globetrotters would be played by the Washington Generals in blackface.
There you go.
Yeah. I think that would be just fine.
Did you know that Eve went and saw the Harlem Globetrotters when they came to town?
Oh, no. Not
my daughter, Millis, I should say.
That's right.
She actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
You would be a terrible spy, by the way.
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. Because the first thing I do, use the knife with the wrong hand and the fork with the wrong hand.
Is that how you tell who was a spy?
That's how Americans got captured in Germany during the World War II.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Because in Europe, they hold their fork with their left hand. And cut with their right, and they also use their fork solely with their left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in North America, we tend to cut, and then we'll, you know, we switch hands to eat the potatoes.
We also measure twice, cut once.
We do, and in inches.
Right.
Because we don't like the metric system.
Right.
It's too complicated.
If you give them an inch of steak, they'll take a mile of steak.
They'll take a kilometer of steak.
That's right. Now, the other thing I heard that they used to do was in training, they would wake you up. And you would have to, wake up basically in German. So you wouldn't be like, hey, what's the deal? I busted. It's like, was ist los? And it's like, oh, you're German. Good to see you. Okay, continue sleeping and dreaming of the fatherland.
There you go.
Yeah, and then you go, aren't you speaking English? Like, oh, you got me too. I'm a double agent. And that's how they kept tricking each other. But your daughter, Millis, went to see the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah.
Did she get confetti thrown at her?
She did get confetti thrown at her.
Nice.
And it was supposed to be water.
Yeah.
So everyone was shocked that confetti came out. I know.
How are they shocked
standards.
After 40 years of the same joke?
Well, because they're kids.
All right.
You know, it's not like I don't do that to them. I don't run in the house with a bucket and pretend I'm going to throw water on them and it's confetti. So they've never seen it.
When you throw a bucket of water at your kids,
it's a fucking bucket of water, man. So, I don't namby-pamby my
kids. That's right. It's back to school, splash.
It is lukewarm water out of a bucket.
And then they have to pee.
Because I make them put their finger in it before I throw it in their face.
Okay. Well, I'm going to call Child Protective Services. That just is not good.
Call Zenith 123.
Well, I remember there was a knockoff Harlem Globetrotters. And it was like,
is that right?
Yeah, it was like the Harlem something else. And it was like the Harlem other guys. And they competed against, I believe, teachers in school, like either elementary school or junior high school. They had the teachers go up against them. And
I thought it was against the Washington Corporals. It took me a while to think of a rank that was below general.
Yeah, it is tough.
I was going to the
Washington Privates. That sounds bad.
Washing their privates.
That's right. If you want to see the Washington Privates, go into a stall and do a wide stance and you will find that. But I remember the teachers went up against them and mm-hmm. the teachers, it was junior high.
Okay.
The teachers really were there to play. Like they played aggressively. And it was like, it's good time fun. It's a comedy show, guys. But they went, we're going to show them.
Yeah.
Don't show them. That's a no win for anybody. What do you want to see? Like that team get their clocks cleaned? Oops. No, that's no good. Boo. Boo, I say to the junior high school teachers.
Well, is there much... I mean, I know that they're an entertainment giant. You know,
yes.
Kind of like... But there's not much reason anymore for the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, you know why it originally started, right?
Well, because I remember from the cartoons, it was because they were superheroes.
Yes.
And they needed something to conceal their identities. Okay. And so they traveled in a van solving crimes. Mm-hmm. But then when they needed to, one of them would have their afro grow big and they would pull things out of it. Yeah. The bald guy would turn into a basketball. Curly would turn into a basketball. I think Metalark Lemon had some other fire powers or something.
Okay.
But they were superheroes was the original idea. Am I wrong about that? Did the cartoon lie to me?
Yes.
Occasionally they team up with Scooby-Doo. or get lost on Gilligan's Island.
The NBA, the National Basketball Association, was, of course, segregated. So there was black players weren't allowed to play in the best league.
And yet they were allowed to be in NWA.
They were allowed to be in NWA. That's right. That's right.
Northwest Airlines. That's what I meant. What did you mean?
That's what I meant, too.
Oh, good. Okay.
Actually, I meant Alaska Airlines because I was a little confused alphabetically.
Right.
Alphanumerically. But no, they weren't allowed to play in the NBA. So the owner of the Harlem Globetrotters was able to cherry pick the very best players, and you know, you have them on the Harlem Globetrotters as this touring team.
Nice.
And this was a way for them to make money, you know, as players. I mean, they love to do, obviously, and they could make a good living at it.
They were the Clown Princes of Basketball, I believe they were called.
Maybe they were.
I believe that's what they were called.
The Crown?
No, Clown.
The Crown Princes?
No.
Of Basketball.
Clown.
Crown.
No.
Cloud.
Okay.
Cloud.
Dave's having a stroke.
I smell
Dave,
toast.
If you could smile for me and let me see if your smile is even. Okay, that sounds fine.
My teeth aren't.
That's how you can tell if you're having a stroke. Are your teeth crooked? Right. Sign one.
Sign one.
Quickly, floss. All right, go ahead.
I can't remember what I was saying.
You were talking about the Harlem Globetrotters.
Harlem Globetrotters. But just the idea now, I mean, obviously now the very best players are all playing basketball in the NBA. They're getting paid really good money to play
Absolutely.
In the NBA. And so who are playing on the Harlem Globetrotters?
Well, I think it's now more almost like, I don't want to say Cirque du Soleil, but it's more like jugglers almost. Like it's more like stunt. They know the stunt things to do. It's not, you know, they've got
I know they have
basics.
A really good female basketball player on the team.
Right. So,
because, you know, because there's no, I mean, there's obviously there used to be the WNBA,
yeah,
but is there still the WNBA?
I believe people are still making fun of that, so I assume there is. I know them mostly from the
Twitter.
Jokes.
Let me just check Twitter and see.
They're definitely the underdog.
Some of the sports-related Twitter guys.
But I think it's mostly, it's stunt basketball they play. They don't play legit basketball. They play stunty.
Check the Sklar Brothers Twitter role and see what.
Should I?
Yeah, no, I'm just.
Okay.
No, of course not.
Now, we were talking a little bit about movies,
We've been talking about movies a lot.
Okay, so we shouldn't.
No, we should.
Okay, because I'm going, you set this up as the thing we're going to do. I'm trying to segue into it, and you just completely segue block me. You took your Segway scooter, drove in front of me, which isn't a big deal. I can just, like, walk around that. That's not hard to do. But Dave had
not when I'm riding it so close to a cliff.
Right. Okay.
Too soon.
Yeah. What? All right. So Dave had an idea for a theme show, and I don't want to fight about it, so let's do it. And the idea behind it was listener questions. And it was like, we will answer your questions. And I went, Dave, we have not asked the listeners for any questions. And he went, does that matter? And I went, yeah, it matters. We've got to ask them for questions.
Oh, okay.
So his second idea, by the way, we're doing listener questions at some point. So send us in your questions either to our website or to our Facebook page or to our individual Twitters, whatever.
Yeah, look, or email us.
There's infinite damn ways for you to contact
there's
us.
There's so many ways you can contact us. It's sick.
It really is. SIC, spelling mistake.
Especially for two hermits.
That's right. So Dave had an idea, and that idea was the most racist movies of all time. And I went, let's not do that. And then he went, second idea, the most overrated movies of all time.
The
and
most
I went,
over racist movies of all time. That's what I hear with next.
But then I said next to that. So we went like the third idea, the most overrated movies of all time. So this is our personal opinions. Dave has written down four actually.
Four, yes.
Lazy man McGinty wrote down four.
No, I've got five. I've
Johnny
got five.
Play along here went for five, did his homework. Dave did his homework on the bus on the way here.
I've got five.
All right.
I've got five.
So we're talking about movies that we consider overrated. Now, these are not, you know, like, hey, the Transformers movie. That did great. Big money. But I don't think anyone, like, is rating it super high.
No. These are books. These are not books. These are movies that if you looked in a book or if you went online or wherever people go to find information about movies, the barbershop, people would be
speaking, the movie Barbershop, the movie with Barbershop, Ice Cube.
Speaking of NWA,
right?
The National Women's Association of Basketball
That's
Players,
right?
NWAB, right. WAB.
How many Barbershop movies were there? There was like Barbershop, Barbershop 2.
There's four of them.
There was a Beauty Salon one.
There's four of them.
Okay,
because it's a Barbershop quartet.
Okay. Damn it, that would actually be a good Barbershop
why
collection.
Why did they do that? Ugh, they probably stopped at three. They're like, no one needs a fourth. Except for the marketing guys.
They might have had a third Barbershop, but they did have a spinoff with Queen Latifah, I believe.
But we're not talking about the Barbershop movie, because that movie
was overrated.
I don't even know what it did. I don't even know if it did all right.
Well, it did enough to make at least two other movies.
That's no guarantee, because it's a pretty...
All right, what's a failed movie that then spun off two other movies? Name one of those.
A failed movie that spun off...
A failed movie that has had two sequels.
Barbershop?
All right. Asked and answered. All right. What's number one on your list of overrated movies? Now, you may disagree with us. And if you disagree with us, don't just yell at your computer screen or into your iPod. Write us and go, hey, fellas, yeah. What up?
What are you talking about?
All right. Dave.
Don't go there.
Dave. Don't go there.
Don't go there, girlfriend.
That was the name of our original podcast that wasn't very successful, was Don't Go There, Girlfriend. And do you know who never listened to the show? Our wives.
That's right.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm going to go from five to one.
Ugh, okay,
I'm going to start with number five.
I don't support your ideas enough. Too much. All right. I'm going to do prime numbers.
Well, I just think you should start at... I'm just looking at Ian's list, and looks like to me as movies he has a particular pet peeve with.
All right.
But anyway.
Go ahead. I'll do 5-1 as well.
Okay. The first one I took is, I think this is a pretty well-regarded comedy that if you talk to most people, it made good money.
Right.
And it's spawning a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's a very good film, and that's Anchorman, the Will Ferrell vehicle.
Okay. It's actually spawned a half sequel as well. They took clips from the original Anchorman and they made another movie out of it that they included on a DVD collection.
Because they improvised so much hilarious comedy.
That's right. They had enough. What is your beef with said film?
Okay, my first objection to it is that it's not funny.
Okay, that is opinion. Fair enough.
Well, I mean, that would be my beef. I mean, this is my point of view.
Okay, that's personal taste.
Can
now
I would say,
like to know the scientific basis for this. Break it down for me.
XY on the axis of comedy.
On the axis of evil.
Axis, X1, X to Y. Well, I will say one thing about the film is it has one...
You will say more than one thing.
It has one great scene in it. And that is the scene where the various anchor people are fighting.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That is great. That's like a great scene.
Right.
And if the movie had that, like more of that, or had that as a concept throughout the film,
mm-hmm.
it would really be good. It would actually have like a gripping, interesting story instead of what it has. Like to me, the problem with the film is it's a bunch of people who are way too pleased with themselves making a lot of jokes. Basically, Anchorman is kind of like the Casino Royale or What's New Pussycat of our time.
Okay.
Which is the horrible fact that you are watching people who think they're having the greatest time in the world, and the fact that they're enjoying themselves so damn much, you should be doing it too.
Okay. And a lot of people did.
Well,
of the popularity of the movie and how much people love it.
And I can't argue with that, but I can argue with the fact that it's an awful film. Another film I don't like that's in a similar thing is The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh.
I do not like that film at all.
Oh, I disagree with you completely on that one.
I think that's a very sweet film. See, I don't like that film.
What don't you like about
it? I don't like that the person has to change himself so much to become an acceptable person.
Okay, I think in that film, what they're saying isn't you've got to change yourself so much, but that he, like a lot of people, was going through a period of arrested development where he stopped at a certain point and just gave up.
Okay.
And he matured, not as in like, hey, what you're doing is pathetic and sad,
mm-hmm.
because no one goes, what the fuck is with the blah blah so much. It's really not. You know, it's you know what, there's life out there, and if you just open yourself up to it, like he had bad experiences with women, and so he shut down and went, I'm not going to even try anymore, and that was his flaw. And so he withdrew into his own little cave and his own little world, and he just kept things safe And he was a very sweet guy. He was a kind person. That was the thing I think was very smart, was they played that he was kind. And then, you know, he does things throughout the movie that aren't selfish, that are, you know, where the woman that he fancies, her daughter is in a bad position in like this group therapy session or some such. And everyone's about to make fun of her, and he takes the bullet. He takes the bullet for her. He knows that's going to happen, and he takes the bullet for her. And it's the kind of thing a parent would do. And it was like, that was a really good scene just to show, like, no, he's maturing.
Okay.
His big embarrassment above all other things is he's a virgin. And he puts that out there. He takes the biggest bullet he can take for the girl. And that just really worked for me. I thought emotionally it worked. I liked the reactions of the friends when they realized that he was a virgin. And it wasn't just, you're an asshole. It was, hey, we should help. But they helped in dumb guy ways that seemed realistic,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they were all incredibly flawed themselves. I like the one guy who was just obsessed with a girl and wouldn't let it go. And like all of them in their own way were Arrested Development in some specific way.
Okay.
And so that kind of worked for me. So I like that. I like that.
Didn't do it for me, but that's yeah. It's not on my list. So.
Okay. But Anchorman, I think, has a similar thing in that Anchorman is a satire of masculinity and what men think of themselves. And it's yes, it is. I've actually just listened to a podcast with one of the writers of it.
And, it's a satire yeah. of a satire of what men think of themselves. Then because it doesn't succeed at that because mm-hmm. it's, you know, there's a scene where he's down on his luck after having been tricked into saying "fuck you, San Diego" or whatever.
Right.
And he's eating dog food or something in the restaurant. Like, what? Why would the restaurant be feeding him dog food? The fact that my face did not change its expression at all for that scene. There's this huge deal made about some sort of perfume, the tiger something cologne that the one guy has.
Yeah.
Not funny, and yet it goes on for about 4 hours.
Did you like him playing the flute?
I don't remember that scene.
He played the flute. It was pretty funny.
There's a scene in the car where he's talking about San Diego to the female anchor woman, anchor lady, anchor person. What's the word now?
Anchor woman back in the day that they were doing
anchorite.
This. Anchorite.
And you know, and then he says San Diego means something like whale sperm or whatever.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Like it just seemed like every time, like there's just no... I don't know. It doesn't connect to my sense
yeah,
of humor.
It definitely was of a tone, and it's the kind of tone where if you don't connect with it, brother, the whole movie's going to stink for you.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where everyone loves a movie and you see it and you're just like, it left me cold.
Right. My problem with it is, unlike 40-year-old Virgin, where there is actually a journey for the character, yeah. I don't think there's a journey in Anchorman. Basically, the character that you've got at the beginning is the character he is at the end because we like that character, and it's like, well, the audience is supposed to sort of.
Okay.
At least he's hilarious and we like watching him and he's enjoyable.
Hilarious.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And like by the end of it, he really hasn't learned much and it's just a thing and he's where he was and the female lead, Christina Applegate, she doesn't really grow that much as a character and there's just blah, 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 blah. It just wasn't grounded. Like it took place in Crazy Town and yeah. that's fine. It's wacky Crazy Town.
It's fine if it's funny, but if it's
yeah, but again, that's funny. Just opinion, you know, that's like,
well, it doesn't matter. I mean, these are overrated. So, I mean, there are opinion of these films.
What I'm going to try and do in mine is structurally show why this doesn't work for what they were trying to achieve.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to try to do and fail. Like, do you think that they achieved the type of movie that they wanted to achieve? Were their goals in that met?
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care. I mean, I'm not rating the film based on their goals.
Right.
Fuck their goals. I don't care what their goals
I
were.
I think that matters when you're talking about a movie.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. Because if say someone has a goal of you want to do a movie about a sympathetic character and watch their growth,
yeah.
and then the movie does not show that,
yeah.
then you failed in your goal. Okay. Like there's personal opinions and taste.
That's one example.
I don't like this type of music. That's mm-hmm. blah blah blah. But then if you're trying to do a love story and then in the middle of it you have a creepy rape scene, then you have failed in your love story. You have not succeeded in yeah. what you wanted to do.
Okay.
You know,
all right,
but you're wrong about 40-year-old Virgin. That's fine. Okay, my number five movie.
That's just your opinion.
Could be. My number five movie is Pinocchio.
Okay, that's very strange.
The Disney film Pinocchio.
I know it fairly well. It's been a while since I watched it.
Now, the original story of Pinocchio, it's almost like you do anything wrong in this world and you get Old Testamented so hard. Like the second if you spoke badly to an elder, someone would pull your tongue out and cut it off.
Yeah.
And everyone would go, well, looks like someone deserved it.
That's how it should be.
Yeah. There used to be a series of German fairy tales. And in every one of these, the child would slightly misbehave. Like, and then Hans slept in for an extra minute. Yeah. Well, the house caught on fire and Hans died. Well, I guess that was Hans's fault for being a lazy Hans.
Okay.
That's basically, to me, Pinocchio, which is you got a guy, he wants to have a kid, can't have a kid, never explain why.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you have a kid the natural way? I always connect it with 40-year-old virgin, actually. I always wanted to see a scene where Geppetto's sitting around a table and everyone's talking about like having kids, and it's like, oh, it's so much work. You got to cut the wood. You got to pray to the blue fairy. It's like, you can just have sex with a lady. What? No one told me. My parents lied. I'm so upset. So anyway, Pinocchio gets brought to life because Geppetto prays to the blue fairy. Mm-hmm. So we live in a land where blue fairies grant life.
Grant wishes, yeah.
To things. Okay.
It's a fairy tale world.
So somehow, I don't know what Geppetto's religion is, but apparently it's fairy-based.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
He's a Wiccan.
He's something.
Yeah.
And so Pinocchio, shows up. And Pinocchio ventures out into the world,
mm-hmm.
and everyone in the world wants to enslave or eat him or just do horrible things.
Yeah.
And what you learn from Pinocchio is, don't go out into the world. It's terrible. Everyone in the world, except for Jiminy Cricket and Geppetto, is terrible. Well, here's the scene.
What's funny in the original book is Geppetto is killed, like, in the first or second chapter, I think.
Well, Jiminy Cricket is.
Oh, Jiminy Cricket, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm your conscience. Fuck you, step, squash. Yeah, there you go. Off I go. And then someone tries to boil him alive in the book. Like, the book is harsher than the movie.
Yeah, it is.
But here's the scene in the movie which loses me. It's the one where they go to Donkey Island.
Yeah.
And, or whatever they call it. Obviously, they don't call it Donkey Island, probably, because that's a clue.
The island of... No, I can't remember. Yeah. I was going to say the island.
Where are we going? We're going to Pedophile Island. Okay. maybe we should have seen this coming. So what they do on the island, these are kids. And here's what the kids do. They smoke cigars and play pool. Okay, so because they smoke cigars and play pool, they get turned into donkeys and worked to death in salt mines. That's what happens. This guy, demonic big fat guy, turns them into donkeys, and the whole idea is, well, you deserve this. There you go. And I remember as a kid watching this and thinking, oh, well, when Pinocchio gets rescued, as he does, he'll clearly go back and rescue those children or mention that, donkeys are children being whipped to death in salt mines. We're going to mention that, right? Because they played pool. So something about that, right? Pinocchio gives a fuck about anyone? Nope. Pinocchio cares about number fucking one. That's what Pinocchio cares about.
Okay.
It's such a horrible message to me to kids. Like, it's, again, it's oldie-timey German,
Italian, but...
Yeah. Okay, but vengeance of, they were all in World War II, Dave. They were all in cahoots.
That's right.
Look, when you're talking European fairy tales, mm-hmm. you step an inch out of line,
yeah.
and you are a dead man.
Well, that Donkey Island was Japan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
See when it was made.
And that's where they met Don Quixote and Donkey Kong. Anyway, so that's what bugged me about that movie was just the general what's the general message? It's just like, behave all the time. Don't trust anyone. Don't venture out. Boo.
Yeah,
life is for exploring, but if you do, you deserve slavery. You deserve to be sold into slavery.
Okay.
And we're cool with that because you deserved it. But you had it coming.
It feels like, it feels like you're being a little unfair in the sense
that... To the slavers.
You said to me when I complained about Anchorman...
I don't remember that. When was that?
You said,
Did
they succeed in making the movie they wanted?
That's a good point.
Did they succeed in making the film that they wanted?
Right. Well, I think they were looking for a joyful film, and I don't think there's as much joy in the film as there could be. Yeah. Whereas you look at any of the other movies, you look at like a Sleeping Beauty or a Snow White, there's joy.
Mm.
And when he gets turned into a boy, I don't know. I just think like the journey that he goes on, you know, it doesn't really work for me story-wise.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a beautiful film. I think it's one of the best animated films Disney's ever done. But I think story-wise, it's so flawed that it is overrated.
Well, there's an interesting...
It's number five on my list.
There's an interesting series of interviews with Robert Crumb that's on the internet, if anyone cares to look it up.
Right.
There's a website for Robert Crumb.
He likes big butts and he cannot lie.
He cannot lie. He does... Well, he likes big legs as well.
Okay.
And he cannot lie.
He likes legs. He cannot lie. He knows how to use them.
So this is Pinocchio. This is related to Pinocchio.
Oh, very good. Lie. That's right.
Because Robert Crumb is Pinocchio. That's the true part of the story, is that that's who the little boy became, Robert Crumb. That's what happens to you if you are almost turned into a donkey.
Right.
If you get put into a cage, made to dance like a puppet, right, you will become Robert Crumb.
Well, here's what you don't know. Wow. In the original story, Pinocchio was carved out of a loaf of bread, which is why his name was Bobby Crumb.
Bobby Crumb. He's talking about one of the people who animated for a long time at Disney Studios and whose name has just gone out of
my
head.
One of the old men.
One of the seven old men, that's right.
Grumpy, Doc, Bashful.
It was Doc. And what Doc said was, because Crumb knew him fairly well, because he kind of, his daughter was a girlfriend of Robert Armstrong who played in the Cheap Suit Serenaders with R. Crumb. And
okay.
So they were kind of connected to this guy whose name I can't remember. And the thing he told Crumb was that the way to make Walt Disney laugh was to make ass jokes. And he said, Pinocchio is full of ass jokes.
Yeah.
Just stock full.
Yeah.
And that's why. Because that was the way to get your ideas.
It's shocking that he got spurted out of the blowhole and not the butthole.
That probably was in the original. The whale takes a big shit on the beach and Pinocchio's lying.
Right.
Like, oh,
it's okay. Also terrible whale anatomy. If you're looking at what the inside of a whale is like, no, sir.
Yeah.
Your stomach is not connected to your blowhole.
They don't have, and they don't have boats inside them.
Yeah, though that whale killed a lot of people. Hey, wait.
What was the name
of
the...
I like this story more when it was called Jonah. Thank you.
What was the name of the whale?
Monstro.
Monstro, that's right. Not Nostromo, as I was thinking.
No, it was not. What is number four on your
number
list,
Number four on my list. I can't remember.
Fantastic Four.
I wrote it down as initials.
Rise
as
of
initials.
The Silver Surfer.
I wrote it. It looks like DL. What do you think that would be?
That would be You Hate Anything with DL Hughley in it.
I don't know who that is.
That is a comedian.
So I'm going to move
DL,
up.
DL, down load.
I'm going to
down move. Down Periscope, down low.
Shoot. So I'm going to go past that one.
The Mighty Ducks
I'm going to go
live.
Past that one. I'm going to go to... We kind of talked about this one before.
Dark Man Lives.
So I think we can go past it fairly quickly, but Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
It's to me a very overrated horror film.
Right.
Overrated in the sense that it didn't work for me and I wasn't frightened at all in the film. Because for me, a true horror film, I don't enjoy horror. Like, I'm not scared by the Friday the 13th films or those movies. Those movies
there's
do
nothing
not
scary in Friday the
there's
13th.
There's nothing scary in them, no.
There's nothing scary about a knife coming through someone. That's not scary.
No, it's
that's
gross. It's just gross.
Ugh.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I need atmosphere.
It's as scary as someone popping a balloon behind your head at random intervals. You know, you will react. But you're not going home that night going, oh, jeez.
That was a scary
thing. Balloons.
Yeah. I can't believe it.
No, you're just like, gross.
Yeah, that was okay. Like one of the most effective scary sequences for me is there's a Mario Bava film. Oh, I keep clicking my tongue. I'm going to stop. There's a Mario Bava film called Black Sabbath, mm-hmm. and it's a collection of three horror.
The scariest horror movies are divided into three.
Is that right?
Yeah, because you don't have time to get used to it.
I guess that's
so. You're just like,
maybe so.
And then you're thinking about that one going, oh, I'm shaking that one up. What's happening now? I'm getting set up. Oh, fuck. Oh, now here comes the third one.
I'm jumping out of the.
Yeah.
It's called A Drop of Water. And it's a very simple story. It's just a nurse who is working at home at night.
Ugh, I don't like it so far. It's scary.
And she's kind of a slut in the old sense of a slut, kind of
a slattern.
A slattern, yes. And she is called to this house of this woman who it was kind of a mystic. She mm-hmm. was a psychic. She had seances and stuff like that. And of course, she goes to this house, and it's full of all these dolls and stuff all through the house and cats. And it's night, and she goes into the bedroom and this woman's laying in the bed and she has this most grisly look on her face and her eyes are wide open. And it's just this little old woman that almost looks like a child laying in this bed with this mask of this horrible face. And actually it was a mask. Actually, Bava's father made this mask for him for the film. And it's just horrifying, just terrifyingly. And the film builds up to such a degree that when there's this payoff, actually the first time I watched it, I had goosebumps. I was like, ooh, like, you know, like that to me is terror. The problem with the Blair Witch Project, and I was really excited by the film when I first heard about it, because heard about Roger Ebert talked about it because he'd come back from Sundance right. and seen it there. And he kind of talked about it on at the movies and gave us a little bit of a hype for it. And it sounded like a great idea, this idea that, you know, people had gone to do this documentary and it disappeared and this was a search for them. So I thought that was a great – that's what it sounded like, right?
Yeah.
But the film isn't like that. And because of the way it's made, which is interesting, but it doesn't allow for any buildup of tension. Like the very final film and the very final scene in the movie, which I thought was interesting, but it would have been so much better if it was slow mm-hmm. and had music and allowed you to pick up all the nuances that you were, you know what I mean? Like you just yeah. had time, but because it went so fast, I actually wasn't frightened at all. I was okay.
Music would have taken it out of the reality.
I know,
situation.
But I mean, you watch a movie with music all the time and you're still in their reality.
Now,
but...
I have to see none of these, but have you seen any of the Paranormal Activity movies?
No, I haven't seen
them. It's a similar vibe, I assume, you know, because it's all the found footage. They're playing the videos back from the house. And mm-hmm. so you've got no music, mm-hmm. which can be – that's something I can see as being a good thing in a horror movie because so often you have the music holding you by the hand and taking yeah. you along. It's like, now you should be scared. Oh, now here comes the part where you know the cat's going to jump out. Here's this. But if you got silence in a movie theater, that can be creepy. You know, maybe it didn't work for you in this case,
no,
but that can be an effective tool.
See, a movie that I thought was really effective was the American version of The Ring. I didn't like the Japanese. I didn't like Ringu as much because I didn't like the psychic elements that they brought into it. Mm-hmm. I found that this didn't work for me. But the American version, I found very compelling, and probably one of the scariest scenes for me was a scene where it's very simple. They're just climbing up a ladder to a loft in a barn.
Yeah.
But because they're climbing up a ladder, they're trapped in this situation where you can't just go back quickly.
Yeah.
So it's very tense. They're climbing up to what you don't know what's there, and it really works because also the film is very good at establishing a sense of creepy dread because before they get to there's a scene where the horse runs out of control on the ferry and plunges. I think it runs off the ferry and plunges to its death. And so it sets up this feeling of unease. So you have that sequence happen. So you're already on edge, and then you get to this place that's, you know, a creepy farm with a mean dad and a, you know what I mean? And the other thing I liked about that movie was we just had come out of this Devil's Backbone, Sixth Sense, the one with Nicole Kidman. Was it The Others?
Yes.
Where you had good ghosts. You kept having good ghosts that were there to help us. And stuff like that. And The Ring and Ringu, but of course, I hadn't seen Ringu at that point. I just had seen The Ring first. Turned that on its head, took a character, and it's like, no, she's bad. You know, finally, like, oh, wait, great. A ghost that is actually bad, right? So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Right. Ringu is the ghost of Pingu. Am I right about
that? Right. Pingu.
Pingu the Penguin.
Love Pingu. Girls watch that all the time when they were little.
Yeah. Seven icebergs.
So with Blair Witch Project, I thought that they really set up some great ideas at the beginning of the film. Like when the guy's describing the witch,
yeah.
seeing her on the other bank of the river, and her arms are all covered in hair, her lower arms are all covered in hair, mm-hmm. and just stuff like that, they're kind of creepy details.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I can't wait till we see that. You're never going to see it.
No, you're never going to see it because it's got to be in your own head, yeah.
I don't know, but it doesn't have to be in your own head. I mean, you can have creepy elements that you expect to come. But the movie really has no payoff.
But if you actually did see the arm, that would seem to be proof. Like you've got to, in the gimmick of the movie, you've got to make it still maybe or maybe.
I don't
maybe
know.
They're standing there because he's this or maybe because of that. Like realistically, one of the kids could have been the murderer.
Yeah.
Like the kid who left could have been the killer.
Except his tongue was like.
well, you don't know that's his tongue. Yeah, I mean, okay. They don't do a DNA test by any means.
She did. She put it to her tongue and tasted it.
And went like, oh, he loves Skittles.
That's right. That's Kevin.
That's Kevin. When you're talking about, the Ring, that something that used to bug me was when we watched late night TV, they had a series of ads, which was just this flashing images from The Ring.
Oh.
And it was like, when you die, you see The Ring.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need this at 2 a.m. I don't need this shit. Don't do this to me.
You probably haven't seen The Ring, hey?
I've seen enough of it.
You don't really like scary films that much.
You know what? So. It's not scary films. It's just like, basically, my imagination can make something scarier than the film. So if you give
that's what a film should do.
Well, yeah, but I don't need that in my life. I don't need, like, you give me those ingredients, I'm going to bake a fucking cake in my head that's worse than the one that's there.
It's easier to freak you out.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. Like, when I saw those images, what it reminded me of was Willy Wonka. And it's that scene where they're going through the tunnel. And he's talking about, you know, are the fires of hell, da 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 da. And he's doing the really creepy thing. And then he gets to the other side. All right, let's get out. But there's all this flash. flashing images in the background, and there's a millipede walking across a guy's face, and it's just like, what am I seeing? And it's just like, there you go, and that's what it reminded me of. And so maybe I'm like locked into that, and like, when I see a series of images, it's like, oh, God damn it. I'll just, I write scarier stuff in my head.
Mm. See, but the problem with Blair Witch is it doesn't, like when you get to the climactic scene, it doesn't let you write what's going to happen. It just happens so quickly that absolutely all of my anticipation and fear just went away, because I was like, oh, well, they're running so fast, I don't have to worry, because they go around the corner, around the corner, around the corner, around the corner, and then the basement, and this happens, and clunk, and then the movie's over.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Understood.
That ended.
Understood.
Okay, you next, because I still have to figure out what this D element is.
Sure enough. This one's a quickie, because it's a very simple element that bugs me. I've heard a lot of people saying good stuff about Terminator 3.
Who's that, me?
Maybe you have, yeah. But like, I think it falls under...
I don't think that movie would be considered overrated, but okay, go on.
I think like when you look up, you know, its critical scores, they're pretty good. And I think over time, it's the one that's like maybe on the fence. But I'll say quickly why I don't like it. I think it does what Alien 3 does. I think it does what a lot of bad sequels do, and it erases the movie that came before it.
Whereas
Terminator 2 was about hope and listen. You know what? We say there's destiny, but you know, if you do the right thing, you can change destiny, and mankind is in control of its own destiny.
Exactly.
Terminator 3 went, what are you going to do? Can't do nothing about time. Walk, walk. So, well, who fucking cares now then?
Yeah.
You know, we're all slaves to, you know, this. We're basically, the game is not free roaming. It's on a rail, brother. So just suck it up. Your free will means dick all, which means there's no heroism, which means your choices don't matter, which means why am I watching this movie? Bang, 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 the end.
I know what that one is now.
Okay. To your movie, David.
Well, let me just...
Unless you have a comment.
I just want to say one thing about Terminator 3, which is, I'll agree with you in every way, because that film was very disappointing.
Thank you. All right. What's your next movie then?
But that scene with the fire engine going down the street is really good. That's a really great action sequence.
Okay. I also
just like the Anchorman scene with the guys fighting.
I like him with the coffin over his shoulder walking around. I think that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
There's good stuff in it.
There's good, interesting parts. But yeah,
But the point of it stinks. And also, the female Terminator was not in any way as cool as the one in number two.
Mm-hmm.
When you saw the one in number two,
Robert
Patrick,
like,
what the hell is this? I'm seeing things I've never seen before.
When
he gets thrown against, like, I think a wall or something, and then instead of turning around, he just puts his face to the other side. It's like, yes, that's what you'd do if you could do this. And it's like, what's the deal with her? She can expand her boobs. All right.
Is this
a direct-to-TV movie?
That was pretty impressive.
Okay, and you know, well, I'm just saying, you know, all the Terminator movies, I saw Arnold naked. I did not see her naked. So, yeah, boo. Okay, moving on.
My fourth film, you're maybe going to disagree with me a little bit.
I disagree.
Okay,
second
film. I've had to jump back to the fourth film.
Let's agree to disagree. Okay, go ahead.
It's the Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you can see there's a poster on the wall for that. So please, sir, go ahead.
This film had several problems. And the worst one being that it had Where Did You Go To, My Lovely by Peter Sarsted playing throughout the opening short film that opens the DVD. I don't know if it was open in the theaters that way. I didn't see it in the theaters.
Okay.
I saw it in DVD.
All right.
I know you have a poster up for it.
I do. It's one of my favorite movies. Please continue.
Right?
Yes.
Is it really?
It really is, yeah. I mean, I think definitely A Life Aquatic is right up there with one of my favorite movies. But Darjeeling Limited hit me in a good place. And
Because it didn't hit me in a good place at all. In fact, it left me completely cold when I saw it. And I never connected to the brothers. I never felt like they reached any kind of rapprochement that had meaning to me. I mean, I know the film brought some kind of closure or whatever to it, but I never felt it. I didn't enjoy the journey. There's a lot of it I didn't like. Like, I just didn't like them.
Right.
I didn't like the situation.
They weren't likable people.
They weren't likable people, not then or not at the end. Like, there's never a time where you're like, oh, I'm going closer to these guys and I kind of see their point or whatever. I just never felt that way. I just felt that they're very spoiled, that, you know, whatever they're going, and it never resolved things for me. It didn't resolve the dad. It didn't resolve that aspect of the film, of that problem they're having, which is obviously kind of centered around the dad, focused around the father, projected onto their mother, you know, and then going to their mother is going to solve everything, which it doesn't, of course. It doesn't, because it can't.
It can't, yeah.
But I just felt like there's no, unless Bill Murray is their dad.
Ha! Okay.
But I just, I just did not enjoy that film at all. Like, and
because
any complaint that someone's made about Wes Anderson films, and where I went, oh, come on, you're missing the point. you know, or, oh, they're just wrong.
Just too precious.
Yeah, I just felt that way about that film.
Right. I think for me, it really worked. What I get from a lot of Wes Anderson movies is life is sad. Mm-hmm. Life can be really sad. And how do you deal with the sad?
Yeah.
And you see each of them dealing in their own way with the sad. One person's going suicidal. One person is setting up rules. One person is doing this. One person's doing that. And
one person's stolen things that are meaningful.
Right. Yeah. They're all fighting the sad. It's like they all are hurting so much inside.
Yeah.
And they're like, how do we self-medicate? And it's all the self-medication. And then it's like, you know what? I'll be okay if I'm over there. If I'm over there doing that, that'll get rid of the pain.
Yeah.
If I see my mom, then I'll get rid of the pain. And they go, mom's got her own pain. Well, fuck, mom's supposed to heal our pain. Shit. Yeah. And at the end, when they realize, you know, I mean, it's the obvious metaphor, is they lose the baggage. It's like, you got to leave this baggage behind because you're carrying this shit with you. You've got to drop the baggage. It's the only way to move on with your life. That to me was like such a good message. And they set it up so well with showing what they were all doing. Like everything they're doing to heal themselves is the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
To the point where one is actually trying to kill themselves to avoid the pain.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you just got to let this go. You got to let that go. And when they do, yeah, that really worked for me.
Interesting, because everything you're saying, I agree with you, and I saw in the film, but it just did not.
It did not connect.
It did not connect to me at all. Like it, just for whatever reason, it went right over my head.
I think,
and I was looking forward to it because I love Wes Anderson movies.
I think all the movies that you're talking about made bold choices that, if they connect with you, that's great. And if they don't connect with you from the get go, so long, Chuck.
Well, this is
like you're off. You're not on board through the whole damn thing. But they all made. But none of them, I think, were pandery, and none of them were like, you know what, the audience will love this. It's like big, bold, weird, fucking choices. And so I guess like as a writer, I admire that on that level as well. That like. What the hell? What the deal with the snake? And the guy's working in the, you know, what's his thing? Oh, but he loves her. But they think, and you think on one level, it's just, oh, no, but no, they're still an okay couple, even though she's fighting her own stuff and she wants to be off of this and everyone's got their own thing. And, you know, yeah, the scene where they try to rescue the child and can't also really was, really worked well for me. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, see, this left me kind of cold.
That is absolutely fine. Speaking of leaving you cold.
Okay. Oh, we're on to number
three.
Number three.
The Titanic, where a lot of people die in the cold.
See, I will totally agree with you. I will agree with you in every way.
It seems like you're agreeing with me a lot, and yet we're disagreeing.
But what I'm just
saying
is... I did
say it was opposite day at the beginning of this.
Do you feel it's a critically acclaimed film, Titanic?
It was the most successful film.
I know it's the most successful
of all time,
film,
so I think that can be overheard.
I'm not going to take... Okay, okay.
Wait, was it nominated for an Academy Award?
I don't... Was it?
Yes, I think it was. I think it was nominated for Best Picture, so yes.
So was the some Cecil B. DeMille film about a circus in the 1950s.
That's a good point, that movie that's right.
But
the circus
I'm just,
movie.
What I'm saying is that it's no guarantee
Big
of quality.
Big Top Pee-wee, I think
it's
it was
no
called.
Guarantee of quality that a film is nominated for an Oscar.
Okay, well, quality isn't overrated. Like a film being quality doesn't mean it's underrated or overrated. If a film is the most successful film of all time, plus nominated for an Academy Award, I believe I'm able to say overrated.
Okay,
sir,
go ahead.
I believe that criteria is met.
All right.
I have two pieces of picture ID, sir, and I would like you to cash this check that I have just written.
Yes, I will.
So
I'm going to be taking 20%, but I will cash the check for it.
Yeah. Here was where the movie lost me. The Irish people dancing.
Oh, really?
Everyone's dancing. That was thing one.
So,
I'm going to America. Oh, we're on. My dreams have come true.
Right, dreams
it's
going to
be
true.
Great. Oh, I couldn't be happier. By the way, I hate the cold. Anyway, I'm going to go to America.
My name's Brooklyn, and I'm going to make it through this war.
That's right. I got 2 days before retirement. Exactly. So it just seemed to like ride stereotypes. Everyone was like, for a melodrama, it should have been in black and white. Mm-hmm. It should have not had words. It should have had title cards. And there should have been someone playing the piano with dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump-a-dump.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah, and then... Again, you don't need the old lady at the beginning. You don't need the Jewel of the Sea. We don't need any of that business. And oh my Lord, there's room for two on the raft.
There's room two on the door. It's a door. It's a door.
Imagine,
it's a big door.
Imagine if it was two, like it was reversed and she's in the water. Yeah. Is he going to go, yeah, well, you know, I wanted to go to America.
I wish there was room in the door for you.
That's right. You know, when they call women an ice queen, she was an ice queen.
What? Okay. Now, maybe I'm coming at it from a different angle. What I really objected to in the film...
You're pro-door.
I'm pro-door. And I thought, it's terrible that they're tearing the doors off them to use. I'm like, this is fine craftsmanship that you were destroying to lay on. Yeah.
Could I also say with the overrated thing, they're bringing it back in 3D. So look.
I think they already did, didn't they?
Did they? Oh, all right, fine. It's something. It came back.
You know what's funny is my daughters love that film because their grandma, my mother-in-law, they had it on video. So the kids grew up watching it all the time.
I used to, when I worked in Halifax, I would walk to work through a cemetery that had, I was going to say Titanic survivors. That'd be weird. Why'd they bury the survivors? Where they had people who died in the Titanic.
They were all supposed to be killed. It was actually a conspiracy.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was the Illuminati, the CIA. There's no evidence. If you look at the Titanic, you can't tell there's any commercial markings on it.
Right. Well, there was a second shooter behind the grassy iceberg.
Yeah, that's right. And how exactly did a ship that was made like that, how did it melt and collapse?
Yeah.
It looked exactly like it was falling.
Well, if you look at this picture of Lee Harvey Penguin, I think, all right.
You know, a professor visited the crash site of the Titanic, a professor of English literature, and he, looking at the site, he said, I've never seen anything that looked as much like a demolition site as that.
Oh, yeah. It was an implosion.
It was an implosion, yeah.
That's right. Totally. Now, who I'm blaming is the band who wanted to stick around. Why do you want to stick around and play your instruments? Yeah. I'll tell you why. To cover the evidence up.
That's right. Because, you know, only they wanted to listen to Abide With Me 25,000 times.
Yeah, they were a member of the terrorist group Ice-Qaeda.
Oh, no, it was CIA.
I know, it's the same thing.
CISA.
David.
CISA.
You know Al-Qaeda and the CIA are the same thing, right?
The Central ISIS.
They're two sides of the same coin, brother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're two sides of the same coin.
I agree with you.
Flippity, flippity.
Okay.
All right, what's number three?
Well, I'm just saying with the whole iceberg thing,
yes,
there's a lot more beneath the surface.
Damn, I wish we could end the show now. Go.
What? No, I just want to say the thing that bothered me about Titanic was the whole upper class, lower class snobbery.
Yeah.
You know, like just the whole like upper class, the richer jerks, the poor are all great. Because we know how great poor people are and how bunch of jerks. Rich. It just seemed like so black. Yeah, like I say, it's so black and white.
They actually had the guy from the Monopoly game come out and just kick a baby like over.
And then laid a cigar with a $100 bill.
That's right. And then bought a hotel on. Yeah, okay.
Well, he traded four houses for a hotel. Next on my list is the film that everyone loves that I hate so much, Seven.
Okay.
The David Fincher film.
You hate that movie where it's the children growing up and we see them every 7 years.
Every seven, up seven.
That's right. Then all of them become serial killers.
Because they've been filmed for so long, they can't stand not having people pay attention to
them.
That's
right.
Only every 7 years, I want it all the time.
Okay.
My objection to that film is my objection to all films that have this character. But this is like, to me, the beginning of this character in a way, or the most obvious example of this character, and it bugs me in several ways.
Okay.
The first part of it is that it has the classic omniscient character. I hate the omniscient murderer or villain in anything. Like, just the fact that a character knows how to do everything. He's a surgeon. He is a craftsman. He's an artist. He's a painter. He's a writer. He's a psychologist.
Joker, a smoker, a midnight toker.
A midnight toker. He's a space cowboy of love. He's a... Some people call me a serial killer. He's psychic. He's able to anticipate not just one or two people's moves, but an entire city's every move. He's able to turn himself into a police station and escape or whatever happens. I can't remember. Or he does it intentionally, right? Doesn't he? Because then...
I think, yes, he does.
So some totally unsympathetic character.
So he can see what happens like in front of him. Yeah, they take him out to the desert or whatever.
So some totally unsympathetic character can do something so totally idiotic that it you know, you just lose all that film. And the other problem with that film to me, and the reason that a lot of people like it, is that it strokes our egos. It strokes our sense of moral superiority over fat people, mm-hmm. over greedy people, over sex, people who like sex, I guess.
Over people who have heads.
People who have heads. People, you know, like...
There were so many jokes about that. I was just like, heads up! I wanted you to get a head in life. Here's the headline for you.
But yeah, like that...
I call her Hedy Lamarr.
So that film, you know, it appeals to our worst aspects of ourselves, which is our own pride and how great we are.
Right.
You know, and how lousy everyone else is. And also it has...
They had it coming.
And has the terrible character that the writer falls in love with, that they cannot bear to part with, which is what happened with Hannibal Lecter as well.
Yeah.
The writer falls in love with this character, and instead of him being an asshole murderer, which is what he is,
yeah.
he becomes this, you know, paragon of... of perfection, of this guy with great taste and food and music and literature and clothes and whatever, can do whatever he wants, go wherever he wants. He's a murderer. He's a serial killer. All he thinks about is killing people. That's his sole thing. I remember reading this interview with Alan Moore, and he scoffed at that concept of the serial killer and said, music, those guys couldn't tell music from something clanging a pot. Like, they don't, that's not what they care about.
Yeah, they're a junkie.
They're a junkie, that's right. And their fix is their sense of power and superiority that they get from murdering and torturing someone and killing, you know, or torturing someone and then killing them.
Yeah, but that doesn't make for fun film, I suppose. So what you want is you want to see Moriarty. But but you want to make a gory Moriarty. Oh, well, hello there, okay, Goriarty.
But that's that's one thing. But we're not asked to.
I'm writing down Goriarty.
We're not asked to admire Moriarty. We don't like him in the Sherlock Holmes films.
I wonder, don't you?
No.
Don't you think Moriarty is a little bit?
No.
Hmm,
no.
I guess not.
I don't like him.
Okay.
I'm happy that. Let's talk in the latest film. I'm happy that he meets his end.
Okay, how about Sherlock in the miniseries, the Benedict Cumberbatch?
I don't like him. I like that character even less.
But do you think he's cool?
No,
he's not cool.
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
All right.
Because you said something to me one time, and I really made me think, because we were talking about Gross Point Blank, and you said, I have a problem with the movie that has a hitman as a main character you're supposed to admire. And yeah, I would feel the same way about Moriarty or the character from Seven. To me, like, the best film to watch about a serial killer is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Now, that's a film that will make you uncomfortable watching a movie about a serial killer. And you should feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be thinking, oh, I wish I was that guy.
Well, they had a thing recently.
He likes wine.
I forget the name of it, but it's a game that's in black and white that's on, I believe, the Xbox. Damn it, I wish I remembered what it was. But it was like kind of
Castle Wolfenstein?
Sure, let's go with that. But it's like a zombie game, but they call them shadows instead of zombies, and it's kind of a post-apocalyptic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a thing where through the game you collect cards that have information about serial killers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're reading about, you know, Charles Manson and da 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 and whoever. And then, you know, Ed Gein or whatever. And then one of them on there was Robert Picton. And it was just like, it just felt like,
ugh. Now that's icky.
It's really icky.
But it's icky for all of them. Like, I just read this great book, great graphic novel by this guy named Durf called My Friend Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, because he went to school with Jeffrey Dahmer. It's a really interesting book. He is in no way admiring Jeffrey Dahmer, but he talks about this person that he knew and hung out with and did stuff with. But even he says, you know, he never connected to him. He was part of a group of people but none of them knew him. And because Dahmer was not someone you could ever know.
Right.
You know, because of who he was, what he thought of, you know, what his secret wishes were. You know, he could never connect to someone that way. But, you know, that to me is, you know, how you talk about these things, like using it like that. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because we're not connected to Bundy, or we're not connected to Gacy.
But you and I are lightly connected to a Clifford Olson, because that impacted us as kids.
Or Joe Picton.
For those of you who don't know, Clifford Olson was a serial killer in British Columbia that targeted children. And so,
destroyed the innocence of British Columbia, too.
Pretty much, yeah. And then Robert Picton was someone who targeted mostly prostitutes and women, and had a pig farm, and that's how he disposed of the bodies.
Yeah, Olson targeted young children, teenage girls and boys.
Yes.
He didn't care which he did. So boys, he would pose as a guy who hired kids to work on construction sites.
Right.
And so he'd give you his card. He'd go and pick you up at your house to take you to the work site. And of course, you'd disappear and never be seen again.
Right.
Girls, he would pose as a fashion photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd get them, you know, and he presented himself in a very real way. The problem with Olson was he was a police informant. So he was constantly protected by the police from their own investigation.
Right.
And so he was able to murder for a lot longer than he should have. Like, he was an early suspect, but he kept being shuffled out of the way because of his relationship to the police.
It's like, and when you in any way have any connection with the reality of these kind of folks, mm-hmm. When they touch your life in any way, then it's very strange to have them connected with entertainment. It's very strange. Like, and I understand, like, any murder mystery. If you've really had someone in your family murdered, a murder mystery is going to affect you probably differently than someone who hasn't. Like, you're not going to watch Murder, She Wrote and go, that person drowned in the tub.
Yeah.
If grandpa drowned in the tub.
Yeah.
So I get that. And you've got to have villains and you've got to make things dark.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel...
The real life element of it. Like, you know, when you say, well, Robert Picton made me pause, well, then really we should pause when it says John Wayne Gacy, when we think about all the boys that he killed.
Absolutely.
Or when it pauses when we see Ted Bundy, because Ted Bundy worked here.
Right.
I have a friend who is convinced that a friend of his, a woman, was killed by Ted Bundy, because she liked to hitchhike. And she was hitchhiking in, you know, in BC area. He worked in the Pacific Northwest, in British Columbia, and in Washington State. And he picked up hitchhikers. And she hitchhiked, and she disappeared and was never seen again. So she is a possible victim of this person. So it is, yeah, to me, it is difficult. And to take it, you know, in a full circle all the way back to Seven, you know, I just can't enjoy that kind of hero worship of this creepy asshole. You know, and the fact that just because it's stroking our egos, our you know, our puritanical, you know, Jansenist sense of our moral worth as being in our behavior, the fact that, oh, I'm not fat, or I'm not sex crazed, or I'm not a liar, or I can't remember what that.
It makes it all into us and them, and that's just a shitty place, frankly, to be.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a shorthand when you're doing drama, but it is definitely a shitty thing. I always liked in the early CSIs something I liked, and this is just the line they used in there, but it's a line that's been used in a lot of other things, but it's one of my favorite lines, which is where like the person has been caught. You know, they did something wrong. So, and they go like, I guess the mistake I made was, and they list the mistake they got caught on.
Yeah.
And they say, no, that wasn't your mistake. Your mistake was killing somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, off to jail with you. and they didn't seem to glamorize the killers. Mm. You know, the killers were there to be, you will be caught because you're flawed, and we will find that flaw, and we speak for the victims, and that's our job. And it's not, damn it, this is personal. It wasn't that stuff. It was like, no, you made a mistake. We're going to catch you.
I enjoyed,
then they made it too serial killery later.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first two seasons. Then they brought in that miniature killer
boo
thing. Yeah.
Boo. Anyway, we got about 10 minutes. Then, all right, so let's keep
you
a
next.
All
you
right,
next.
Me. Yeah. Here's one that may anger nerds. Superman. The original Richard Donner movie Superman, which you remember being great, and it has some great elements. It's got a great 20 minutes in it.
I never liked that one.
Okay, but let me – yeah, well, there we go. Then we will agree to agree on this one. Watch it again, folks. Watch it again. There's the comedy elements, boy howdy. You know, all of a sudden Ned Beatty's there and they're playing the tuba.
It's a pretty clumsy film.
Right, and everyone's a dick. Frankly, everyone's a dick. Lois Lane is a dick. Yep. Perry White is a dick. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Olsen's not a dick just because he doesn't have enough lines to be a dick.
Yeah.
Clark Kent, when he's not saving people, is pretty much a dick. There's a weird element to Clark Kent just in general in that he's lying to everybody constantly. And yet he's supposed to be this paragon of honesty
and
virtue.
Well, that's built into the character. You can't really criticize a film for having something that's in the comics.
I guess so. Maybe there's just such a huge flaw in the comics as well to that. Yeah. Where the idea why...
But wouldn't that be every character?
Well, here's the thing. If you love somebody... You should tell them who you are.
Yes, Spider-Man.
You should. Yeah. Like, I think, you know.
He should tell Aunt May.
He should tell Aunt May. Yeah. Because here's the
thing. Not in the comics, because it would kill her.
She's fine in the comics now. She's, like, married to J. Jonah Jameson's dad. It's a weird thing that's happening in the comics right now. But here's the thing.
Yeah, because I think of J. Jonah Jameson as being like the equivalent age of Aunt May. But
yeah, anyway. You got like Lois Lane. She loves Superman, but she's living a lie, man. Yeah. Like she's living a lie. Just tell her the truth. And it's like, well, you know, if she knows, then she'll be in danger. Well, there's one of two ways. One, she'll do a story about you and reveal your secret identity, and then everyone will be in danger. Yeah. If so, she is a queen jerk of the world, and you shouldn't go out with her.
Hey, she's a newspaper woman.
Right.
A story is a story.
Okay, maybe that's the angle. But if the other angle is she's going to be endangered, have you noticed what happens to her every week? She's in danger, period.
She's in danger a lot.
Yeah, but here's the big flaw with the movie.
The danger of being turned into a gorilla.
Is that they've made the villain a big comedic buffoon. Like Ned Beatty is buffoonish.
Lex Luthor is buffoonish?
He is, because he's like putting on the wigs and he's doing shtick and he's wearing funny outfits and he's got the girl going, Alexia, I don't know. And
she's so good looking.
For the 70s. Sure.
Valerie Perrine?
She looks great in an aunt that you feel uncomfortable about being attracted to way.
She does a lot of, what? Are you sure? There's lots of nude scenes in Slaughterhouse-5.
All right, then maybe we'll take a look at that later. Anyway, it's a flawed film, and also the ending being Superman, is told the one thing: don't go back in time. Let me tell you this: don't go back in time.
Yeah.
And he goes back in time.
Yeah.
And like, here's the thing
about
that.
It's a terrible ending.
Right. And here's the thing. Oh, you've got the power to go back in time. Oh, that's great. Here's something you might want to do. Go save Krypton. Or how about now do that every time something goes wrong? You're in no danger ever for ever anything again.
Yeah.
Because you know you can go back in time and fix everything.
Yeah.
Okay. And as we've mentioned in a previous episode, this now makes two Superman.
It's terrible.
Okay. Please go to yours.
Well, I just
it's not a terrible movie.
I just want to say, yes, no, but that ending is terrible.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve does a nice job.
I think he's great as Clark Kent.
I think he's great as Clark Kent. He's great as Superman.
And I like Margot Kidder as Lois Lane, actually. I don't find her as, I mean, she is kind of hard as nails character, but I enjoy that part of it. If you like movies like Jean Arthur's character in Mr. Deeds Goes to Town,
right,
whether the hard-boiled, or Rosalind Russell in My Girl Friday.
Maybe.
If you like that kind of hard-boiled character, that right, hard, you know, tough as nails reporter character, Margot Kidder does a great job.
Here's
in that,
what you need that, to do
character.
Then. Set it in the 30s. Like, do your Superman.
Well, that is a problem with the film, isn't
yeah,
it? But this is a problem with the comic book.
Right, but that's what you can still do. Set it in the 30s, man.
What was the worst thing about the John Byrne reboot of Superman?
That he has a Pulitzer Prize.
No, that he has round glasses.
Why?
It's just so wrong. It's not Superman. Superman doesn't have round glasses.
Well, he was also not a nerd anymore.
It just seemed
they made him rich. They made him successful. And if Clark Kent is rich and successful, well, then he's got it all going on. So just, shut up.
It just felt like they took it out of its time period.
Right.
And when they rebooted it, they suddenly made it this 80s thing. You know what I mean? Whereas before it was kind of existed in this sort of weird timeless place where it wasn't the 30s, but it wasn't the 80s, or it wasn't the 90s. It was just kind of this.
And also, Metropolis had a Statue of Liberty. So stop it. Yeah, they go flying. And
Metropolis should be Chicago, though.
Well, it should be wherever it is. But it was New York. Like, they had they flew over, you know.
That's
the
wrong.
Oh, my gosh. And the scene where she's got a poem. Oh, my gosh. When they're flying, you think, oh, remember that scene? That was great. Yeah. Listen to it again. Watch it. Listen to the poem. Tell me it's good. Okay, continue.
But in defense, Margot Kidder does a good job with that. And the first time I saw that film,
the poem,
yeah, like she does a good delivery of it. Like it's a terrible poem. It's an impossible scene. It's a hard scene to. But the reason people like it is that she does such a good job selling it.
She made a nice meatball out of that piece of shit.
Watch it again.
Okay, go ahead.
It again.
Please continue.
And when I first saw that film, I saw it at the theater at SFU.
Yeah.
One of the universities. I went up there to see it, and it opened with this Joe Jackson film of him singing "Is She Really Going Out With Him?"
Yeah.
That was the best part of it.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know who he was, and then I saw that song, and I was
one of the first albums I ever won. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Here we go. Moving along. We got to click along. I got dinner plans with my wife, so I got to
go.
There we go.
So the last one, this is going to be controversial too.
Okay.
I'm quite certain. Blade Runner.
Okay, yeah. I don't care for that film either.
It's been a totally overrated film. That's interesting. I'm glad we're on the same page.
That film I know a lot of people love, are nuts for, bores me to tears. And then they went like, hey, let's look at the director's cut. Okay, that sounds good. Let's see how this is. Bores me to tears. Okay, you know, they recut it into a third version. All right, here we go.
Here we go. This will really work. Why is unicorn? Well, okay, it doesn't work for me because I'm a big Philip K. Dick fan, who is the source material.
You're
for
a big Dick fan.
I am a huge Dick fan. If anyone who knows me, they always, I have a shirt that says
you can't get your fill of Dick.
I was saying that. I have a shirt that says I'm a Dick fan.
Okay,
it says that on.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it gets conversation started. A lot of uncomfortable ones, it seems.
Sure.
But I'm a Dick fan. And this is a great thing to cut out of the beginning of the show, by the way. So the original book, which is called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? If I can just kind of set it up really quickly. In the original book, the Earth is dying. People are leaving. Animals have disappeared. People are disappearing. People who stay there too long start to become stupid. They become what they call in the book chicken heads. They're affected by this radiation or this something that's happened to the environment of the Earth.
Not to be confused with what a slang term is now with the term chicken head.
Okay. So
that's actually people who also are fans of Dick.
So in this,
okay, go ahead.
Fans of Dick. When, so in the book, a status is to own an animal because animals are gone. Animals have disappeared. So a status thing is to have animals, but there are no animals. So most people have fake animals. They have these replicant animals.
Okay.
So there's a replicant who work on planets outside of, you know, away from Earth, who work there as robots who do, you know, robotic tasks. And then people have these little replicant animals. There's another thing in the book, too, which is called Mercerism. It's this...
People like Rick Mercer.
That's right.
From 22 Minutes.
Yes, they like enjoy his rants. No, it's this character who is walking up a hill, and things are being thrown at him. And all he does is just walk up this hill against all these impossible odds of things being thrown at him every day. And you can put your hands on these two handles on the television and feel his pain.
Oh, wow.
So it's this weird... So because the book is kind of about empathy.
Wow, that is neat.
Our ability as people to empathize with each other and with other things, with animals and stuff like that. So these replicants do not have empathy. They're not admired. They're dangerous in that they don't regard us as people or as things to be, like as we would, as most of us look at people, right? Because what Philip K. Dick was interested in was what made German concentration camp guards act the way they did? What made them turn off their humanity? And so he was examining what makes us human and stuff. And he was using replicants or robots as a way, or androids, whatever you want to call it, as a, this sort of a, you know, as the thesis synthesis of this idea. So in the story, the replicant Pris, who's played by Daryl Hannah in the film, she finds a spider, an actual spider, a living creature, and she just pulls the legs off it because it's meaningless to her, right?
Right.
To this other person, it's horrifying because it's such a tragedy that here's an actual living thing and she just, without, because to her it's meaningless.
Right.
So you can't blame her, but but that's what they are. The movie twist turns it all upside down. So now we admire the replicants. We feel their pain that they are these people, these thinking, feeling things that have been, you know, pushed outside of society and were treated as second class citizens. And oh, isn't that terrible? Mm-hmm. And boo hoo hoo. And this mean guy has to kill him. And maybe he is a replicant himself.
Yeah.
Which is never in the book, that, because we know he's always a person. He's a flawed Philip K. Dick character who's
in trouble with his marriage. And so we feel empathy for those that. Maybe, like, do they feel empathy on the movie? They do definitely feel fear. They definitely feel emotions.
But they shouldn't, right? Like, they're not us.
Yeah.
That's the thing in the book,
That's
right?
What I never got. Like, when I saw it, was like, okay, they seem to definitely be scared. They seem to definitely have hate.
Yeah.
They seem to definitely find things amusing.
Yeah.
What's missing again?
Yeah,
like,
right.
what's the thing?
What's the difference between them? Yeah, so the book, the movie, like, the thing is, and I often find this with British directors, is they love technology. They really could care less about the actors in the movie.
Yeah.
And the movie becomes about itself, about the technology of the film. And that's probably the reason Stanley Kubrick stayed in England when he went there, is that because his movies have that element to them as well. You watch a movie like Barry Lyndon, which is this technically great film. It has this lens that he got that was used for the moon landing that he was able to have developed so that it could film in candlelight. So it has all these great technical things in it. But the movie is this totally cold tale, told without feeling. Mm-hmm. that the only emotional outburst in it is Ryan O'Neill spanking his son in this totally brutal scene.
Are you saying that Stanley Kubrick was a replicant?
He might have been. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he had that aspect of British filmmaking to him that I've just noticed personally, that it always seems to me that films, they lack a human element, that they really enjoy the technology.
Yeah, often in a British movie, it feels like the actors are just in the way. If they, like, once we get really good CGI animation, I think there's going to be a lot of happy British directors who can just go, I'm just doing what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's
get out of here, you.
There's lots to admire in the Blade Runner film in its world visually,
vision. Yeah,
the
visuals, yeah.
The whole idea of this sort of
some great
Chinatown
scenes. Yeah, but for some reason, yeah, it leaves me cold as well. Yeah. Maybe that means I'm a replicant.
It leaves me outraged. No, you're not a replicant.
And now, and again, I don't want to rush things, but I got about 3 minutes left.
Okay,
so here we go. I'm gonna go with this as an overrated film. It's not the most. Well, geez, I'm trying to think. It's not the most admired in the series for sure. But it's coming out on Blu-ray very shortly. It's
Ooh,
being re-released.
Can't wait to see it.
Temple of Doom.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I hate that movie. because to me, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a pretty near perfect film. It replicates.
It was in your top 10?
Yeah, it takes the serials and it upgrades them. It takes the old timey serials mm-hmm. and upgrades them. There's very little in the movie, with the exception of, I think, the end scene with the Nazis melting.
Yeah.
That you would not see in a serial.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, again, up-resed. It's like, you know, but now taken to modern standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind the scene with the Nazis because we are a modern movie. Let's just do one of these.
Yeah.
And that's the climax. Mm-hmm. So it works for me.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't in an old-timey movie have the actual wrath of God.
And not to be unfair, but the scene with the Nazis is kind of clunky in a way. You know, even at the time when you saw it, It wasn't like, you weren't like, oh, that was so realistic.
No.
It had this element
But it was shocking.
It was shocking, but it had an element of of just kind of like, ooh, interesting. Or,
yeah, it really did, though, take
the melted wax.
That's right. It did take the, like, if you when you didn't expect it, it was like, what am I seeing? You know, again, I'm a little kid when I'm seeing it, but holy cow. Now the scene that I dislike the most in Temple of Doom is the one where the guy gets roasted alive in the cage and lowered into I guess like a volcano. Am I thinking about it? He's like got his heart taken out and is that business. Now here's the thing: you would not see that kind of scene in a old timey serial. I don't think you would ever see a guy in that kind of torture, burning alive scene. So,
do they show it that graphically?
Yes, it's very graphic.
Like, you know, as usual, I've seen it one time.
It's my least favorite scene, and it feels like every time that I turn the movie on because it's on, that's the scene. And so I'm like, is this as bad as I think? It's basic. It's very close to as graphic as the Nazi one. Like, it's very slow torture of an innocent. When you saw it with the Nazis have earned it over the course of the movie. When you see it with this guy, it's just a guy getting tortured. And it's just like, fuck, it was like the first kind of torture porn I remember seeing in a movie. And that really disturbed me. But I think structurally, where I'm going to go scientifically, it doesn't work, is it doesn't, it is not of the genre that they're in.
Scientifically.
It steps out of the format.
Okay.
And it's just like, ew. And then we're into it. The other elements that I don't like about it are you had in Raiders a female lead that seemed to be the male like the equivalent to Indy. She could drink guys under the table. Mm-hmm. She could hold her own.
Yeah.
You know, she still got scared of stuff, but then so did Indy. This gal is scared of a bug. She's
not scared of a bug. She's scared of a wall of bugs.
Right. She's dumb as a post.
I'd be scared of that wall.
She's having a lousy time through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other gal seemed to enjoy the excitement. Okay. She was into it.
Yeah.
She could outsmart a Nazi. She knew what she was doing. So you went from smart, full, well-rounded character to Dummy Von Dummington. And then the guy, like, you know, Harrison Ford rolling his eyes through the whole thing and having to drag sack of bricks along with him through the whole thing. So flaw on that. Also, then it's a prequel. Why? No reason for it to be a prequel. That could be a sequel. Absolutely. And if it's a prequel, why in Raiders, then is he like, you know, I don't believe in mystic stuff. Really? Because I saw a guy take his heart out, catch on fire, all this other business. What the hell? That makes no sense as a prequel.
Did he see that?
Yes, he did see that. He was right there for that.
Didn't he get turned into sort of like a zombie sort of thing in that
one? I'm not sure. But then enough mystical shit went on that, you know what? This ain't your first rodeo.
Yeah.
And the last movie...
Well, George Lucas used computer animation to take out that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then.
He says, more of this stuff, more of this gobbledygook. I went through this stuff in the Temple of Doom.
Right. And it's the start of Steven Spielberg thinking kids are adorable and they'll pad your movie out.
Oh, okay.
Ah, boo. Look, Short Round, bless his heart.
Yeah.
Would have been a nice little.
We all saw Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. We all want to see.
All those kids in Normandy Beach.
Oh, they were.
They're so cute.
They were the first ones.
They're so cute.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, look at, they're fighting with all those little kids running around playing.
Okay.
The kid doing cute
By
stuff.
The time we got to that, he was over it. But this was the start of I think the kidification of both George Lucas and Steven Spielberg was a bit of their downfall.
Okay.
You know, Star Wars, the Star Wars movies, too much kids in them.
Yeah.
Too much kids. We don't need that business.
Kids don't want to see kids.
Kids don't. Yeah. And kid tested, mother approved. That doesn't make any sense. Having the kid in there, unnecessary. So we've got dumb as a post. Unnecessary kid for adorable nature going, Indy, with a little bit of an accent that I don't know, maybe, I'm not going to say it's a racial character, but it's not a racial character.
Yeah.
It is on the fence.
Okay.
And that fence is around an internment
film,
camp.
That film has a lot of questionable...
Yes.
That aspect is questionable.
That one seems to have been written by Grandpa at Christmas dinner.
But still, I do like that film. I find it an exciting... It's an exciting film. It's a really well-made, exciting film.
The mine cart scene is very exciting.
The dinner sequence, I enjoy that. It's fun. It's goofy.
I guess
the monkey brain stuff,
the
wall of bugs. I don't like bugs. I'm not a bug fan.
See, what it felt like, this movie felt like, one, the stereotypes were written by Grandpa, and when Grandpa couldn't do it, they had like an 8-year-old boy write it and just go, hey, what's gross? This. And it was like, ickity, ickity, ick.
There's one thing in the film you don't like that you're just, now you're just picking.
No,
picking
I think it's flawed from start to finish.
I just want to say one thing that makes a film one of the greatest films ever made, which is that, what's her name, Kate? I don't know her name.
I'm not sure either.
She's really good looking.
Okay.
Really good looking.
So an actress who's good looking. All right. That's unusual.
That pretty much saves a movie for me.
All right. Good, a bunch of good looking. I thought by the time they got to The Last Crusade, that was a little flawed. It was a little
bit... See, Last Crusade is a movie that I don't like at all.
It's just, it's too on a stage. It's too... You've lost the locations. You've lost. It's not grounded.
This left me cold.
I like the opening with Phoenix. I liked with River Phoenix.
But even that, it just feels like kind of paint by numbers, just to get, you know. Oh, that's where he lives, like snakes or snakes. There's where he got the whip from.
Yeah, it is a little bit of that.
Where he got the hat from.
But I would have liked to have seen a bit of that action in Temple of Doom. Was like, you got a prequel for me, huh?
Yeah,
how about a little setup as to how you got to where you are there? Maybe now you joined the school. Maybe da da da.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my thing. Temple of Doom, worst movie ever made. I think we can both agree on that. Okay.
No, Blade Runner.
And that is our five overrated films. If you have different opinions, keep them to yourself.
That's right. Shut up.
You know, get your own damn podcast.
We know best.
Yeah, we do. Ah, you can argue with us if you want on our thing.
Please.
Anyway,
I know that we're in a rush to get out of here, but let me just say. Like us on Facebook.
Yep.
Visit us on Facebook. You can comment there. We read your comments, sometimes even answer, respond.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us on our website. I am always willing.
SneakyDragon.com.
SneakyDragon.com. I just did a big redesign of it, too, if anyone's interested in looking at it.
Yep.
I did a bunch of work.
Looks a bit like a mini golf course now.
Spent 8 years, $4,000 upgrading it.
That's not bad over an eight-year period.
Well, I had to.
It's only $500 a year.
It was
that's pretty good.
Basically, it was $4,000 on prostitutes. Had nothing to do with the
I hope the serial killer from Seven isn't around.
With his gigantic dildo.
You're going to be killed on a sex website.
I'm going to have a giant dildo?
Sure, let's go. Once again, Dave, big dick fan.
Very big
that
dick
might
fan.
That might be one of our new t-shirts coming out. by the way, yes, we are looking for your questions. If you have any questions about anything, it could be pop culture. It could be about podcasting.
About us.
About like us.
If you're curious.
Whatever you want.
Why does Ian wear his hair like that?
Right, exactly. Sorry about that. And so on. So there we go. All right. I got to go have dinner with, my lovely wife and my sister-in-law and probably David as well.
I might join you.
Okay. So big dick fan.
That we're going to eat?
Can't get his fill. Big dick fan. Okay. Wrap up the show.
Well, I thought that was the end of the show. When
was
you say
it?
That's pretty much the end.
All right. We're done.
We're done. Goodbye, everyone.
All right. Bye.